Our linguist Jeff Nunberg has been thinking about some of the ways we use the word love, as in love child, love nest, lover. He says there's something about the word love that makes it irresistible to the media when they want to inject a salacious note into a headline. Jeff points out that times may have changed, but when it comes to language, Victorian euphemisms still reign.
When it came out recently that Denny Farrell, the chairman of the New York Democratic Party, was about to have a baby with his longtime partner, the New York Post reported the story in true tabloid style. "Farrell has fathered an out-of-wedlock love child," it proclaimed a bit redundantly. Farrell was enraged, and not least by the wording. "It makes it look like a major sin," he said. "We're living in the 21st century." Farrell's response provoked predictable indignation from the cultural right. A columnist at National Review commented sarcastically that Farrell's remark was a perfect encapsulation of the modern mindset. And an evangelical blogger noted that when last he looked, bearing a child out of wedlock was still a sin. But even if you want to defend Victorian moral values, it's odd that we're still using Victorian language to describe them. And particularly an item like love child, which the Victorians used as a sentimental euphemism for bastard in an age when the illegitimate had neither legal rights nor social identities. Even at the time, the phrase was considered a bit fulsome. Dickens thought that it disguised the pain of being illegitimate. As he put it, love child means anything but a child of love. And some worried that the phrase was actually contributing to a moral decline by casting a romantic veil over illegitimacy. As one clergyman put it, "It would be hard to estimate how much the substitution of love child for bastard has lowered the tone and standard of morality among us, or for how many young women it may have helped to make the downward way more sloping still." But nowadays, it's hard to find anybody who will stand up for bastard. There are still lots of people who consider it sinful for unmarried people to have a baby, but linguistically at least, we try to refrain from visiting the sin on the offspring. That's why we no longer use bastard in its original meaning unless we're speaking metaphorically, as in arena football is the bastard child of the NFL. For us, bastard is merely an epithet for a disagreeable person. Something like son of a bitch, which could also imply a dubious birth, back when bitch suggested promiscuity rather than mere nastiness. "If you want to call me that, smile," Gary Cooper said famously in the 1929 movie The Virginian, but nowadays people are a little vague on what you were supposed to be smiling about. Once people stopped using bastard in a literal way, they no longer needed most of the euphemisms for the word. We still describe things as misbegotten, but we don't associate that word with illegitimacy anymore. But journalists still cling tenaciously to love child, as if bastardy were still something that has to be danced around. For some people, love child has simply inherited the taint of bastard. Love child, the Supremes sang, never quite as good, afraid, ashamed, misunderstood. But when you see it in the media, love child suggests not so much shame as titillation and scandal, particularly in high places. It's only the rich and famous that the press describes as having a love child. Ordinary folks have to content themselves with having children out of wedlock. But then, euphemisms that contain love often have a suggestive or lurid cast that makes them too delicious for the press to abandon, even when time has passed them by. When it came out that Bernard Kerik was using a police department apartment in downtown Manhattan for assignations with his girlfriends, reporters were quick to talk about his love nest, a phrase that by all rights should have expired at the same time Prohibition did. Or then there's simply lover. When you see a headline with a reference to so-and-so's lover, you can usually assume that there's something sensationalistic or lurid afoot. "Officer says he didn't shoot lover. Peterson's ex-lover testifies." So I was looking forward to a juicy read when I saw the headline in the San Francisco Chronicle not long ago, "University of California creates $192,000 post for Santa Cruz Chief's lesbian lover." But the story itself was a letdown. It turned out that the lesbian lover in question was actually the longtime partner of the newly hired chancellor at UC Santa Cruz, and was herself a well-respected professor of engineering at the University of Washington. That might be a potential administrative scandal, but it was a singularly unsalacious one. When I asked a friend at the Chronicle about the use of lover in that headline, she pointed out that gays and lesbians sometimes do refer to their domestic partners as lovers. "That's true," I said, "but not with the adjective. I want you to meet my lesbian lover, Jane." Since time immemorial, there's been no word like love to evoke a wink and a nudge. It isn't just journalists who know that. You think of all the phrases beginning with love that softcore pornographers use to delineate the sexual anatomy, always prefaced by throbbing or churning, and somehow more lascivious than the words they euphemize. Or for that matter, recall how Johnny Carson always got a laugh when he worked an item like love-starved or love-hostess into a routine. If Victorian morality still has a hold on us, it has a lot to do with our reluctance to give up the delight we take in clucking our tongues.
Jeff Nunberg is a Stanford linguist and the author of Going Nuclear: Language, Politics, and Culture in Confrontational Times.